Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.
Like this throw right here. It's Adams again! The connection! Down 73 yards.
Be violent. Go get it. Don't let nothing stop you. Gotta fight for everything.
It's Hogan Johns.
It's really cool just to see how much the city of Chicago, you know, the Bears organization, the Bears fans, show love to a family that they barely even know. It is amazing. I love it.
From NBC Sports Chicago, it's Adam Hogue.
There's no ducking anybody in the NFL. No. It's like the Lions still have NFL players.
And from the Athletic, it's Adam Johns.
You know, hasn't Justin Fields done enough to at least pique your interest to see what he can do with them too?
It's the Adams.
That's the best in the city of Chicago.
Hogan Johns.
The Adams converge.
And we are underway.
What's up? Welcome in. Hogan Johns with you. After a couple days to digest, not even 48 hours now with the night game, but it feels like it's been a little bit to digest the Bears' season opening loss to the Los Angeles Rams at outstanding SoFi Stadium on Sunday night. We are back home. We are getting ready for week two, and we're on to Cincinnati, Johnsy.
Are you really? There's players to talk to at Halas Hall later today. Oh, Sean Desai still has to talk this week. Bill Lazor still has to talk this week. So we're in like no man's land where we're going to preview the Bengals at some point while we're still going to talk about the Rams.
You mean players on that defense might actually talk about what happened?
Maybe.
On
it'll be Roquan Smith again.
Yeah, probably. Hey, he's probably going to be the voice of the defense this year, and he is the main guy in the middle. So, we'll have those updates for you and see what they have to say. But we've looked at the film. We've rewatched the game. We've got thoughts and things to talk about. We also have your voicemails. The voicemail segment is back. We're excited about it, and we'll have those here for you momentarily. But welcome in. Hogan Johns here with you. You can follow us on Twitter at Adam Hogue, at Adam Johns. You can read him at theathletic.com/HoganJohns, which is where you should go to subscribe. If you're not already, what are you doing? You are doing it wrong. And Kevin Fishbane will be here today as well. You can read all of his fine content at that same website. I'm up at NBCSportsChicago.com. My first 10 Bears Things column of the regular season is up for you to enjoy. Wrote it on the plane coming home yesterday. And I don't know what else. There's power rankings. There's all kinds of stuff up on NBCSportsChicago.com. Check it out. The presenting sponsor for today's episode of Hogan Johns is Visa, a network working for everyone. The defense, not quite working for everyone for the Chicago Bears, though. I have a feeling, Johnsy, our listeners probably had some thoughts on the voicemail line.
I would say so. Yeah. I would say so. A lot of fingers can be pointed at a lot of players, I would say, after that performance.
Well, let's hear what you guys had to say on the voicemail line, which, of course, is 872-221-0046. Please write it down. Save it. We do tweet it during the game. We try to, but I can't respond every single time during the game when someone asks me.
Put it in your phones, people.
So just please save it. It's 872-221-0046. But here they are, your voicemails from week one.
Hello?
Do you know who this is?
Oh, you didn't know? Your ass better call somebody!
Hogan John's voicemail.
The Hogan John's voicemail line.
Believe it or not, George isn't at home. Please leave a message at the beep.
Got any questions or comments about the Bears? Give the guys a call before, after, or even during the game.
Go Bears!
Da-da-dun, da-da-dun. Da-da-dun, da-da-dun. Da-da-dun, Chicago's Bears. Da-da-dun, da-da-dun, da-da-dun. Da-da-dun, 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 da-da-dun. Chicago's best. Hoggy Cat, John Zipfib, Kenny G on the mic back there. Bob Dabrowski calling in from Hollywood, California. And I am getting ready to watch the Chicago Bears because football is back, baby. And I love it. I could not be possibly more excited. Okay, I've got the malorts running through my veins. I've got Italian beef in my genitals, and I am just pumped up for Chicago football. Football in general, I love it. What a day, what a week, what a country, what a world. We got, today, I don't know, I'm not all that optimistic about today, but, I do think that Justin Fields is going to get in. I think he's going to score a touchdown. I don't think it's going to be at quarterback. I think it's going to be at cornerback. I think he's going to show off his 4-4 wheels, and he's going to get a pick six. Justin Fields, pick six. Best quarter/cornerback to ever play this game in the NFL. And I'm excited. I don't know what's going to happen, but I do know that football's back, and the Chicago Bears are on TV in T-minus a couple of minutes or hours. I don't know. Whatever time it is, time zones are weird out here in California, eh? But we got Chicago Bear football. Let's go. Let's roll. Chicago Bears, bear down.
This has to be the most Chicago Bears start to a game of all games, all time.
I told myself all week I was not going to get my hopes up because you know Andy Dalton's the starter. And yet, we were able to move the ball down the field and end the drive in two turnovers under Andy Dalton. One, bad interception. Two, miss the wide open tight end over the middle. Meanwhile, the more talented quarterback is on the sidelines, and they're not afraid to play him because he already went in and made a great pass. So what are you waiting for? What are you waiting for? Why are we being tortured? We don't deserve more mediocre quarterback play. Quit abusing us, McCaskey.
Dalton just turned the ball over on four downs. This is after his interception in the red zone. Enough! Enough! Justin Fields, goodbye.
What the fuck? Love you, boys.
Offense still looks like shit. Nagy is still an idiot. Awful play management. Awful play calling. Awful clock management. He's an idiot. Please, for the love of God, fire him.
Man, I bet Virginia McCaskey is pissed. Nagy, play the kid or don't. Quit dicking around.
I'm watching from Morocco this week, but I can tell you, the offense actually looks competent. This isn't to keep Andy Dalton in. It should still be Justin Fields, but something seemingly has clicked, and it is an actual NFL offense for the first time in 3 years for the Chicago Bears. Go Bears!
Justin Fields to the dome! Let's go, baby!
Red alert, red alert. Justin Fields touchdown for the Bears. But also, I'd like to point out it was a touchdown in the third quarter, so the offense is already doing better than it was last year. Bear down, baby.
Eddie Jackson, can you make a f***ing tackle, you f***ing...
Un-f***ing believable.
Well, it's fair to say that Marquis Christian sucks.
You guys are absolutely right. I'm tired of Eddie Jackson being a storyline, too.
Hey, what's up? This is Will from Portland. Gotta say, it's really cool to see Chris Conte come out of retirement. I don't know how he got the number four. I thought, Eddie Jackson had that, but whatever. So it's really fun watching Nagy ice both quarterbacks at the same time with this wild swap. Anyway, later.
Outcoached and the defense outplayed.
Boring. This is the same shit we've seen the last 3 to 4 years with Matt Nagy. You cannot win football games like this.
Same old Bears. What can you say? Not saying we need Fields in, but just get the coaching together. Thanks, guys.
Where did Bob Dabrowski say he had the Italian beef?
I don't want to know.
Wow.
Hey, it's a visual none of us ever should want in our heads. Bob. Oh. Hard pass.
Fortunately, it's there. Good calls. Good job. Appreciate everybody chiming in this week. Some funny ones in there. Chris Conte wearing number four. That's good. Hey, I have some frustrations myself after rewatching the game. And I put some of this in my 10 Bears things, Johnsy. And I think this is where I think Matt Nagy needs to be careful here, for just being honest, with how this whole quarterback thing is going.
Oh, 100% agree.
And I've said this multiple times on this podcast, but for those that are saying that this is somehow going to buy him more time or help his job security by not playing Justin Fields, I think it's way more riskier to do what he's doing. But regardless of the quarterback, I saw some things rewatching the game that really have me concerned and have my mind-boggling things. So let's go to back-to-back plays late in the first quarter, okay? This is where they put Justin Fields on the field, I think, for the second time. All right, so the first time was the 9-yard throw on the first drive, quickly followed up by... Let's start with that. Quickly followed up with false start, timeout, end zone interception.
We've seen that before.
That had to be just infuriating to Ryan Pace, Matt Nagy, after all the time they spent in the offseason with that really in mind. And what they've sold Andy Dalton on, right? The operation of the offense, everything being cleaner, and to be better in the red zone, and to not have the end zone interceptions that Mitch Trubisky had. And on the very first drive, after a 41-yard run from David Montgomery, what happens? False start, timeout because the play clock's running down, end zone interception. That is unbelievable. Like, really an unbelievable way to start the season, and yet still completely believable. But later in the first, when they go back to... So here's a back-to-back play sequence. Justin Fields comes on. They flip it back to Marquise Goodwin. Like on that reverse, you remember what play I'm talking about?
Basically an end around, yeah.
Here's the problem with this play. I don't care who's running it. I don't care who the quarterback is.
It stinks.
This play required 39-year-old Jason Peters, who was very generously listed at 328 on the Bears roster. No chance in hell he's 328. To get out to the numbers and make the key block. On who? Jalen Ramsey. Sorry, man. That ain't going to go well. And honestly, I'm sure they schemed that up hoping that it wasn't Jalen Ramsey they were blocking. But still, asking Jason Peters to get out to the numbers at his age, in the shape he's in, that's your play that you're putting Justin Fields on the field for? Just hate it. Just absolutely hate it. And then here's the next play. The next play, Andy Dalton comes back on. Another horizontal play. How many horizontal plays were there in this game? Horizontal now to the right side, the opposite side. It's just one of these bubble screens that they love to run, right? This one's to Darnell Mooney. But it requires 5'9" Damir Bird to make the key block. On who? Jalen Ramsey. Again, probably not drawing that up to block Jalen, having to block Jalen Ramsey, but still, it's the personnel you're asking to block. He's 5'9". He's tiny.
We didn't bring this up in the conversation with Jordan that we had, you know, previewing the game. But she did a great article on Jalen Ramsey being the star of that defense. Now, star is a name for the actual position that he plays for the Rams defense, and it's a versatile position. He's all over the field, right? You're putting your best, one of your best defensive playmakers, maybe even better than Aaron Donald, because you could do different things with him in the secondary, and he's so big as a defensive back. You do a lot of different things with him. And I was thinking about her article throughout the entire game, because he just kept coming up. Like, they were targeting him. Like, I don't know. Maybe it's like a good idea to stay away from the guy.
Well,
he had one tackle on Marquise Goodwin where he suplexed him. Do you remember the tackle I'm talking about?
Yes.
Like, he picked him up like a child and threw him back. That happened in the game. The amount of times we heard Jalen Ramsey's name in that game was alarming to me, because that means they were being out-schemed. That means they, like, the Rams had your number and you could not find a way around this guy. Like, they had other players you could target.
That's the great thing about Jalen Ramsey. He's going to line up all over the field, and it's hard to avoid him. But But that again goes back to what I'm talking about. Like, even if that's your defense, like, oh, obviously we're trying to go towards Jalen Ramsey and they just out-schemed us there. It's still the play design. Did you really think that that play with bringing Justin Fields out there and flipping it back to Marquise Goodwin was going to work with Jason Peters having to get out to the numbers? Or a play that requires Demir Byrd to make the key block? And maybe I'm underestimating Byrd's blocking ability. I don't know. I'm just looking. This is like the first time we're seeing him in a Bears uniform. The guy's 5'9" on Jalen Ramsey. I guess the overall point there is there's just some things that went way beyond what's going on with the quarterback. Like, whoever's out there, that's what you're drawing up in the first quarter of the first game. I just did not like it.
I had issue with, well, we kind of brought this up post game, like feeling the hot hand, like understanding like what's actually working in regards to David Montgomery. I put this in my takeaways column, which will be up at The Athletic, might be up right now. Like when he comes on the third possession, Damian Williams, this is after David Montgomery has clearly shown you that he's going to be an explosive, dynamic threat for you this game. Like, he's the best player. He's the best thing going for the Bears in the early going. Like, I get the idea you have to spell him every now and then, but you really got to, like, you have to show some flexibility with your plan. You could put Damian Williams on the sideline. You could put David Montgomery back out there for your third possession, even if that was in your plan, to give him that rest on that third possession. Understandable. All teams do it. But he had such a hot hand going. Like, David Montgomery had such good things going. And then you open up that possession with a tackle for loss on Damian Williams. It's just, like, that lack of flexibility, feeling the rhythm of what's actually working, like, stood out to me again after going through the numbers on True Media Sport Radar and then watching the game again.
Yeah, and look, I thought Damian Williams played great. I mean, one of the biggest positives, I think, is that running back tandem that they have.
I don't know if he played great. He had 6 carries for 12 yards, but
he how many catches did he have? He was dynamic, dude. Go watch the tape. He was really good. I think between the, but I'm agreeing with your point. Just because your plan was to give David Montgomery a couple series and then give him one off doesn't mean that that's what you should do once the game starts. I completely agree with you on that one. But I do think it's a positive that they have, looks like, two pretty good running backs. I mean, they didn't really slow down offensively when David Montgomery came out of the game. And I think that that was a...
Oh, I thought that drive they did. That was
possession. I'm talking about when he got hurt. When he got hurt and had to go to the locker room.
Yeah.
Like, they seemed to weather that pretty well. But I completely agree with the point earlier in the game where... You went a huge stretch there where David Montgomery didn't touch the ball. And it just, 3 carries, he's averaging 19 yards per carry. Come on.
I put this in my column. Until Justin Fields takes the field, the actual field, and starts for you, David Montgomery is the identity of your offense. Mm-hmm. He is.
Yeah.
He is. With all due respect to Allen Robinson and Andy Dalton, your best player offensively is David Montgomery.
Well, it's probably Justin Fields, but he's on the bench.
That's what I've said, until he takes the field.
So, unless you bring him on the field, then pitch it back to Marquise Goodwin and make Jason Peters make the key block. Hey, if you're like me, an outfit, good or bad, can impact your entire day. Wearing a starchy shirt, that just doesn't feel good. You're not comfortable. It's hard to look good and feel good at the same time, but... That's where Roan comes in, because men's closets were due for a radical reinvention, and Roan stepped up to the challenge. Roan's commuter collection is the most comfortable, breathable, and truly versatile set of products known to man. They have products for every occasion. We're talking about the world's most comfortable pants, dress shirts, quarter zips, polos, blazers. They look great as individual pieces that work seamlessly together. Roan's signature 4-way stretch fabric is breathable, flexible, and works everywhere from your commute to work to even the 19th hole. It's time for unparalleled confidence without all the hassle. My favorite Roan shirt is this white dress shirt. Looks like a dress shirt, but it also looks casual at the same time. It's got anti-odor technology. They call it Gold Fusion, and it doesn't get wrinkled. It stays fresh and clean all day long. No lingering odors or anything like that. The Commuter Collection is easy to care for while staying fresh and odor-free. The Commuter Collection can get you through any workday, straight to whatever comes next. Head to roan.com/Adam. Use promo code Adam to save 20% off your entire order. That's 20% off your entire order when you head to Roan. That's rhone.com/Adam. Use code Adam. It is time to find your corner office comfort. Let's bring in Kevin Fishbane from The Athletic. You may have heard of him. He's a frequent contributor to this podcast. We call him the Fish Man, the Fish Dad. He likes Northwestern. He's wearing a purple hat. And if you are watching on the YouTube channel right now, you can see all of that, including that plant behind him. We like to call this segment In Front of One Fern with Kevin Fishbane.
Actually, a plant.
Yeah, we've talked about that before.
It's fake.
Yeah.
Fake plant.
Otherwise, yeah. You do a tremendous job of taking care of it if it's real.
Also, I should note that the bobbleheads behind me, Mike Singletary, Bronco Nagurski, and Khalil Mack all combined on Sunday night for one tackle, the three of them.
You're going to have to lower your camera, Kevin. We can't see them.
I could see them.
There they are.
Yeah. No, they're there, and they're...
Yep.
Yep, that's what Khalil Mack looked like when I rewatched
it. I actually
think
it was one assisted tackle, too, if you want to make it sound even worse.
Also, how lucky is Robert Quinn? I don't know if you guys talked about this, for getting a half sack on that Akeem
Hicks. Was he even in on the play? I rewatched it. I was like, I don't think that was him.
Like, if anything, I would have given it to Nichols. I thought he was at least closer to the quarterback. I mean, at some point, maybe one day, ever, we can ask Akeem Hicks how he felt about, you know, not getting the entire sack for himself.
One day.
Probably not. I don't.
Probably not.
All right, Kevin. Well, we're ranting and raving already on this Tuesday morning about some of the things we watched when we re-watched the game. Sounds like you have some things on your you've already got a nice little jab in there on a Khalil Mack. I got to say, I think that's the first Khalil Mack game where I did not write down number 52 a single time, either live or when I went back and watched the game. And that is concerning. It just is. Like, this is way past a trend at this point. It's not good.
We all like talk about, you know, how many times he's double teamed, how many times there's a chip block, how many times the quarterback goes away from him. You notice sometimes he doesn't even get chipped. Like, there's a tight end lined up there, so he has to, you know, line up even more outside, impedes his path to quarterback, all those things. Like, I get that. But I feel like now we're at the point where, you know who else has to deal with all that stuff? Aaron Donald, right? Jalen Ramsey, who you guys were just talking about. Those guys had to deal with that too. And, you know, Khalil Mack dealt with that earlier in his career. It's not like the double teams and triple teams and chip blocks just started on Sunday. In 2018, what do you think teams were doing to him? And he was wrecking them. So, you know, I think, like, you know, last year, I've said it, I've written it, the guy was hurt. He had four injuries last year, and he still played like 82% of the time. So, like, you can, like, I think that's a built-in excuse. But now it's just, okay, how is this going to work? And, you know, the idea that he's supposed to be schemed into situations now. But again, it's Khalil Mack. You shouldn't have to get a defensive coordinator to scheme him into opportunities to make big plays.
Just look at what other edge defenders did in week one. Did you guys track this at all? Did you guys see what some of these guys did?
I tracked what Robert Quinn did.
Two sacks, five quarterback hits, one forced fumble. Chandler Jones, five sacks, two forced fumbles against the Titans. And I would say that those guys played maybe better offensive lines than Khalil Mack did. So Khalil Mack had, what, zero quarterback hits in this game? He had five of those games last year, you know, where he's kind of kept off the score sheet. T.J. Watt, last year, averaged nearly three quarterback hits a game for an NFL best 41. And you look back at, like, the quarterback hits that Khalil Mack had last year, he had 13. You know, it's just like, at some point, this is a serious problem, is it not? Like, the production, I get that he's paid a lot of attention to. I get that opponents scheme the hell out of him, right? But don't they do the same with T.J. Watt? Don't they do the same against, you know, like you mentioned, Aaron Donald and Jalen Ramsey, and yet these guys are mentioned, like, consistently throughout games? This is a problem, I think.
Well, and the other problem is that, and I watched Robert Quinn pretty closely, he was getting singled and not doing anything. So it's beyond concerning at this point.
It's all a problem.
It's all a problem. Yes. It's starting to become all a problem, though. It really is. Like, the defense looks old. I think I heard you say that on the radio yesterday, Kevin Fishbane. It looked old, and it's not good. I got to bring up another thing, okay? I have been somewhat defensive of the Bears deciding to keep Jimmy Graham around when they could have used that cap space elsewhere, perhaps kept Kyle Fuller, perhaps kept Charles Leno Jr.
Charles Leno Jr.
I still thought that Jimmy Graham and his 9 touchdowns were valuable. I thought the mentoring of Cole Kmet, that's all real. But whatever defense I had for the Bears doing that involved him playing more than 14 snaps. If he's playing 14 snaps, then there was no business keeping him around on that money when you could have spent that cap space elsewhere. I mean, that makes no sense at all. Even last week, correct me, guys, if I'm wrong, it could have cut him last week and still saved all the cap space, but now his contract's guaranteed because he was on the roster for week one. Instead, they restructured it, pushed another $4.5 million on to next year, now that you got to worry about in dead cap space, all to play him 14 snaps. I don't get that.
You can't put a dollar amount on mentorship. Just ask Danny Trevathan.
Wow. Flamethrower in your arsenal today, huh, Fishman?
Jeez. I'm not even sure I understood that one, but it felt powerful.
You know, Hogue, I'm with you because he led the team in receiving touchdowns last year. He's still a weapon in the red zone. We actually saw why he's still a weapon in the red zone on his one catch, right?
Yeah.
On Jalen Ramsey. It's a good play. But like, what I think the Bears, I believe they were 17th in week one in 12 personnel. And, you know, I assume if Nagy's asked about it, he'll talk about the flow of the game and they were trailing. But if you're trailing, you can have Jimmy Graham and Cole Kmet on the field. Like, would you rather have Jimmy Graham on the field or Demir Byrd or Marquise Goodwin?
Like, and all I'm, that speed, I'm not, right?
I'm not, or none. I don't know who you'd want, but I'm not sure. I'm with you, Hogue, because I think there is a, like, there's some kind of gap there because you can't, like, I'm not saying that they should play him because he's making a lot of money, but you kept him and you're paying him to play, not to just be a mentor for Cole Kmet.
But I mean, even more so, I'm just talking about like the logic of the personnel decision. Like, again, even if earlier in the offseason you thought, okay, this makes sense, we're going to do it, like, a week ago, you must have known by then you weren't going to be using him a ton. So then is it really wise to still keep all the money on the books? Because, like, right now, and I don't know who they can even go out and get, but, like, it sure seems like they need a corner.
Maybe two.
You know, and they don't have the cap space. So just to push another $4.5 million on to next year, to play him 14 snaps, wow.
Kyle Fuller made a nice play there to keep the Giants out of the end zone on Sunday.
Saw that. Did he get any interceptions?
I don't know. But speaking of interceptions, when was the last time the Bears... I should have been the one to look this up, but I couldn't necessarily find it. Last time the Bears as a team had only one pass breakup in a game. Ooh. And that one pass breakup was Jalen Johnson batting a pass down at the line. Like, it wasn't even in coverage.
Oh, yeah. That was actually an interesting play when I rewatched it, because if you look closely, I think Stafford saw out of the corner of his eye that that Johnson was blitzing. I think it was going to be a run, and he saw the corner of his eye that Johnson was blitzing, and he tried to throw to the area that he vacated because it was wide open. It really was wide open. It was like a savvy play, I thought, by Matthew Stafford, but Johnson did a great job of then jumping up and batting the pass down. So it's kind of like two smart plays on the same play, and it just ended in an incomplete pass. But you're right. I thought Johnson played really well, and by the way, I actually thought Kendall Vildor was okay. Like, I didn't see any major problems with Kendall Vildor in that game.
Yeah, I think I said to Johns at some point in the fourth quarter that, like, we hadn't heard Vildor's name at all, and that's usually a good thing. I thought Johnson had great coverage on that third down in the first quarter when they went deep for Jefferson. We'll see what Sean Desai says on Wednesday, but I'm curious you guys' thoughts on that first touchdown. Is Johnson, did he get fooled in that move also? Is he passing to Eddie Jackson, who's expecting to be in position there? Like, I'm not entirely sure. At least to Johnson's credit, he continued after the play and at least got a hand on Van Jefferson. Granted, it was in the end zone, but.
Well, I mean, first of all, it was a great route. Sometimes you do have to give the other team credit.
Great throw.
And because what happens is, I mean, some of the percentage of blame has to go on Johnson a little bit, but Eddie Jackson does have the coverage over the top. And the route was really good that he got Jackson to turn his hips towards the sideline, which is what you're taught to do on that play. And then he cut it back to the middle of the field and basically got him spun around. I mean, it was a really good play. Sometimes that happens. It was a good play design. And again, it goes back to, it's all intertwined because it goes back to me. Yeah, Aaron Donald's a problem. Guess what? Khalil Mack's a problem. Keem Hicks is a problem. One team was able to get deep vertical shots, contain those problems. The other team was not. Some of that does come down to scheme and coaching. And that was a play where they did a really good play design. The players executed. And on the back end, the Bears players completely did not execute because they couldn't even touch the guy down on the ground.
No. That's a perfect example. Even the Cooper Kupp one where, I mean, it takes time to get down the field, guys, right? Where you need your coverage and pass rush to work in tandem there to help each other out. I don't know which one was more alarming, the lack of consistent pass rush by a defensive line that's supposed to be your strength, or, you know, just the glaring holes that continue to show up in the secondary. Because, I mean, it's both problems. It's all problems, John Fox would say. Well, what did you guys think of Matthew Stafford? I have to say, after one game with Sean McVay, like, you could see where the big arm comes into play. Like, wow, it just makes his offense a bit different. Like, I wanted to be sold on this Matthew Stafford idea. I wanted to see it, to believe it. But I think they have something here. I really do.
Well, I was thinking about all the times we've watched Stafford over the years and how often even average Bears defenses have given him problems. Mm-hmm. I go back to 2016, that 3-13 team, I think had like one of their best games of the season, completely shutting him down. And so, you know, and they kept, oh, he's the same guy. And when they say he's the same guy, they're saying that with high praise that he's still a really good quarterback. And then to see what he did to them on Sunday night in this scheme with this offensive line, with these receivers and this play caller. Yeah. I mean, like I'm with you, Johns. I think they have something. I've always thought that Stafford was underrated, but I think I also put that in the context of the quarterbacks I've seen in this town. Right. Like, I've always assumed it, like, you put Stafford.
Well, the Bears love to have Stafford.
Right. Yeah.
What do you think about Nagy was in Cabo?
Exactly. So, you know, no, I think that was quite the pairing, getting him with McVay, getting with this talent.
Those deep shots are, I don't know if they exist, guys, in the Bears offense with Andy Dalton. I really don't, because sometimes it takes a certain level of athleticism to get out there, like even stepping up in the pocket and eluding some guys that are around you. Did you guys see some of the highlights this weekend from some of the young quarterbacks around the league? Patrick Mahomes, Kyler Murray, Lamar Jackson. The stuff that they do, like after the play, is beat, but they create another play within the play. You see some of those plays, even like the ugly pass that Patrick Mahomes threw, just really up for grabs to Tyreek Hill. Do you guys see that highlight? It's just like it's those types of plays that you know Justin Fields could bring to this offense. And they just felt like I knew they'd be limited with Andy Dalton, but to have every completion within his air yards? Just it was not good. And I get the Rams are good at taking off the top, but I don't think they ever felt threatened over the top by Andy Dalton in this game. That's what I'm saying.
That was a thing even last year in Dallas. His air yards were not good. And that was with really good weapons in that offense with the Cowboys. And so that's the one thing I've objected to with this idea that the Bears can win the same way the Chiefs did with Alex Smith in 2017.
But even go back to Alex Smith 2017, that's when the offense changed for them. I mean, he was getting the ball down the field.
That's my point.
Look at this.
That's exactly my point. He was tied with Russell Wilson and who was the other one? It was Russell Wilson and somebody else. He was tied at the top in air yards. Alex Smith was. And that's not Andy Dalton. So don't sell that. Just don't say it's not just the offensive line. It is not just the offensive line. It's the scheme, it's the cornerback, and it's Justin Fields who could potentially change that, because everywhere Justin Fields has been, including Ohio State the last couple years, that is a vertical quarterback who can make plays downfield and buy time with his legs if you don't have the offensive line to protect them.
You know, one of the things that Kyle Orton was really good at.
Oh, boy. Here we go.
Was.
Being in drunken pictures with whiskey over his shirt.
Was drawing pass interference penalties, right? Like, there'd be time he was just like launch it downfield, like, oh no, what's going to happen here? Here comes a flag. And this was in the early to mid 2000s when they weren't necessarily throwing flags when a guy put a pinky on a receiver, right? The point is, you have two really talented wide receivers now, Robinson, Darnell Mooney. And you limit what they can do when you don't push the ball downfield. A couple of years ago, Robinson, I think, was there wasn't like a stat in terms of how he ranked, but he drew like 8 or 9 pass interference penalties. He did draw one on Sunday night that wasn't called. That was pretty egregious miscall. But like, let those guys make plays, force the defense to do something, and allow those flags to come. Allow your guys to go get the football. Like we talked about this a lot last year, right? About like this team has just no yak. There's just no yards after catch. It was the same thing on Sunday. I think a lot of that has to do with the scheme. But, like, get the ball to your guy in stride, you know, and let him go. It's just like you spent all this time on adding speed now, right, with Demir Byrd and Marquise Goodwin. Well, what good does that speed do you if you're just going horizontal all day long? Like, it's just like you just limit yourself so much. I'm very curious to see what the game plan is against Cincinnati. Right, because they can sit here all week and tell us, well, this is the Rams defense. This is what they do. They force you to dink and dunk. We had that shot play. Then we got sacked. Blah, 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 blah. Well, all right. So what do you do against Cincinnati, right? I don't think anybody's going to be going into that game thinking, well, it's the Bengals defense. They're going to force you to do all these things. No, it's the Bengals defense. You should be able to push the ball downfield. And if it's a problem again, you know, then you have a bigger discussion about what are we doing here.
Well, if it's a problem again, let me tell you what's going to happen. Fishman, is Andy Dalton's going to get booed by his own fans incessantly, loudly, angrily. It's going to be that bad. It's going to be that frequent. It's going to be that early, because that 5-play tease, that's what I called it in my column on Sunday. Like, fans now know that Justin Fields is going to actually play in this game, and they're going to be so impatient for that to actually happen. That Andy Dalton has to be like near perfect when he steps on the field. And that's not going to happen, because we know there's limitations there. It's an interesting dynamic for Matt Nagy to really handle. It really is. It's not only the locker room, but now it's like the pressure of the whole fan base and organization. Because you know George McCaskey is going to be sitting in this 200-level seat not liking that. Like, it's not going to go over well. It's not.
Well, at least the defense can't complain at this point, because They can't sit there and be like, we're doing our job and you've got to play the better quarterback. They got to worry about their own stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, can I ask you guys a quick question?
Does that have to do with Kyle Orton? Because I'm still thrown off by it. Like, I was just not expecting the next sentence of the podcast to be, you know what Kyle Orton was good at?
Yes. I mentioned the drunken picture. That's what I visualized was just the big beard and him in at the belly up at a bar.
I mean, really
shout out to Mark Lazarus did a good story on Kyle Orton for our quarterback series. So go check that out.
Sexy.
Let me ask you this about what John's just talking about. What we know, Matt Nagy is stubborn, right? We know Matt Nagy's impatient, right? But this quarterback plan requires patience. Like he's kind of preached that. So like, who wins? Like, Nagy's going to be stubborn about being patient with Justin Fields, but he's also generally kind of an impatient person. Like, we saw it in the middle of week 3 last year when he yanked Mitch Trubisky from the game, even though the team was undefeated.
That was so, impatient Nagy winning.
Yeah. So, like, what impatient Nagy versus stubborn Nagy versus being stubborn about being patient? I'm just like, how, like, like, when, like, what's going to happen here?
Hulk, we've entered the multiverse again, just so you know. That's. Yes. Yeah. Well, let me rephrase Kevin's question. And does Justin Fields playing in week 1 and the indication that Matt Nagy gave that that could have been more snaps, does that lead you to believe that his first start now is coming sooner rather than later? Like, I had, again, the 49ers game circled. You guys had it earlier. I'm willing to now move up my prediction of Justin Fields' start now to week 4. Does it change for you guys?
Yeah, and then there was I think Jay Glazer reported yesterday that was kind of always the goal or the thought or what they're thinking. Who knows? Who knows? Look, let me just say this. I think both of these can be true at the same time. I'm not necessarily a huge fan of having two quarterbacks in the game at the same time, but I actually think it was okay. I didn't feel like any quarterback was disrupted in either way. I mean, it certainly didn't help Justin Fields get into any kind of rhythm, but that was kind of the plan, and he knew that going into it. You're not going to get a rhythm if you're only playing 5 snaps. But regardless of that, I do think it's good he played, because you can't get, as much as they're trying to sell this idea that, you know, he needs the experience and blah, blah, blah. You're not going back to blah, 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 blah,
blah, blah.
You can't get that from the sideline. You know, so I can kind of buy the, all right, let's get in the regular season. He could spend a couple weeks seeing how this works, the game preparation during the week and how, you know, all that. I can sort of get behind it. But at the end of the day, the dude needs to play. He needs to get the experience on the field. So at least they let him go out there on the field and get a few snaps. And it's better than nothing. I don't still completely love the whole thing, but it's better than nothing.
Yeah,
it'll change the season, yeah.
It's just odd strategy to leave your best offensive weapon on the bench an entire game. Like, you just can't do it. Like, you have to give him a little bit. You got to give him a taste.
And to your point, though, just from a schematic standpoint, whether he's a rookie or not, it would have been harder. If you had actually put Fields out there for a whole series or in the second half, it would have been much harder for the Rams to just keep coming and coming and coming the way they did. Because you lose contain on Justin Fields and you're screwed. So their defense would have changed. Now, could they still have sat back and confused him with coverages? Sure, but it would have been an opportunity to change how the game was going. And, oh, you're all, you know, like, clearly, your game plan is to just have these dink and dunk short horizontal routes. I just think that could have been different if you put Justin Fields in there. And I just, Allen Robinson gets at least one route over 10 yards, yeah. Right? If Justin Fields is in the game.
I would say just like a 10-yard scramble for a first down by Justin Fields where he slides or runs out of bounds. Like, that enough would change the dynamic of the Rams defense. Like, that's not on the table for Andy Dalton. It's just not. You don't have to worry about that. Yeah, he could scramble for a couple yards, whatever, but not like that. You know, like, Andy Dalton gains 2 yards, but Justin Fields will gain 12.
Remember the one scramble is actually kind of nice that Dalton had where he got inside the 5, I think. Is that a touchdown if it's Justin?
Andy Dalton might need to go to the Justin Fields school of sliding.
Yeah, that was not a great slide.
Kind of more of a dive. That was a good scramble by him, though.
Sure, it was. I don't think Dalton played poorly. Other than the beginning of the game was not good at all, and let me rephrase it. He had a very bad first quarter because you just can't have an end zone interception, like we talked about on the top of the podcast, after everything that happened last year, that was the thing that was supposed to be corrected. And then the throw behind Allen Robinson on fourth down when Cole Kmet was wide open on the shallow cross, it's just, that's a turnover. And that's
he was almost picked two off turnovers. A couple more times too, wasn't he?
But
at least one more time.
But I thought beyond that, he played okay. Not great, but okay. And the problem is, I think we all agree that they have a different quarterback on the roster that could play much better than okay.
Agreed. Not that you needed to hear that.
No, I don't. But maybe our friend Matt Nagy does. I don't know.
No, Matt Nagy knows it. He knows it. But this is where stubborn Nagy's winning. But then
what's
Nagy's
the
winning.
Point? Are we? What is going on here?
But again, like, what are we doing here? I get it.
Question are you asking me?
Anything okay. else, guys? We're exhausted. It's week one. It's going to be a long season. I mean, I think losing to the Bengals is on the table.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Bears are favored, though, by a touchdown still, aren't they?
I saw three.
Oh, now it's wasn't it like 6.5? Did I see 6.5 earlier?
I don't know.
I'm just making this up in my head.
I can look it up real quick.
The old Bengals.
I thought they were favored by three.
It's a battle of two first place teams.
He's got the jokes today.
You're an idiot sometimes. I can't find the spread right now. If the Bengals can beat the Vikings, they can beat the Bears. The Vikings, meanwhile, have the same problems. They're talking about their offensive line and their secondary this week. And they're upset about their head coach. The Bengals got that win. All right, let's see here real quick.
You got it.
The Bears are a 3-point favorite.
Okay. Maybe I was making that up.
So, I mean, it may have been a touchdown before, but I saw it at 3 pretty quickly. And I was honestly surprised. I guess it makes sense.
That's a home point team spread. That's it. That's all it is.
But I'm still almost a little surprised that the Bears are actually favored after that game the other night. So, and by the way, the Rams might be really good. Like, really good. To your point about Stafford, if that's a legitimate pairing, it looked pretty good for 1 week at least. Like, that's going to be a really tough team to beat. So, all right, any final thoughts from you guys?
Nope. Play the kid.
Got to get to Hal's Hall, see which players talk today. We will be back Thursday with our preview episode to break down this game against Joe Burrow, Ja'Marr Chase. Might start Ja'Marr Chase in fantasy this week after what I saw from the Bears secondary in week one. Might be something you guys might want to do.
You like 50-yard touchdown passes?
Yeah. I do on fantasy,
61
yes.
yards, 56 yards.
I do. I do like those. All right. Well, follow us on Twitter. Kevin Fishbane, thanks for jumping on here. You got 15 seconds on Northwestern?
Thanks for having me. Northwestern gets their first win of the season. And I think for the first time in football history, a coach went for it on 4th and 23 from the opponent's 31-yard line in the third quarter.
Small event. This is the fifth time I've heard about that decision by Pat Fitzgerald.
Wait. You said he went for it?
He did.
Went for it.
Kevin can't get over it though, Adam. I've heard about it five times now.
I thought you said he punted.
No, it's so amusing. No, it went for it. 4th
I'm done here.
From the Indiana State 31. Middle of the third quarter.
Huh.
Yeah.
See, for some reason when you brought that up first, I thought you said that they were like at the Northwestern 23 or something and punted. Like, okay.
Listen, I like to see history. I saw history that afternoon at Ryan Field.
Matt Nagy went for it on 4th and 15.
Yeah, which seems like a much sounder decision when you compare them.
And the route was 13 yards.
Well, I mean, listen. We don't know what was supposed to happen after he caught the ball.
Well, Bears are a good Jet team. Didn't you mention that earlier?
Listen, if Kyle Orton was throwing there, it would have been a pass interference flag. Would have gotten the first down.
Okay. Podcast over.
Jesus. All right. We're out of here. Follow us on Twitter at Adam Hoge, at Adam Johns, at K Fishbane. Read those guys on The Athletic, theathletic.com/HogeandJohns. My stuff's up at NBCSportsChicago.com. Check out the t-shirts. They are on obviousshirts.com. Saw some tweets from people wearing them at SoFi Stadium, which was awesome. Appreciate you guys doing that. And keep it going this week at Soldier Field. Bears, Bengals, good time to wear those t-shirts while the weather's still warm. And we'll have some new stuff coming for you as well. Check out the YouTube channel, Hogan John. Subscribe. Please hit that notification button. Find out when we go live, which we'll still do a little bit. We're still figuring that out because things with post-game are back to how they used to be before last year when it was a little bit easier to go live. So we'll keep you posted on all that. But thanks for the support. Great voicemails this week. Kevin Fishbane, you're the best. Send your Kyle Orton tweets at the Fishman. And we'll talk to you later. See ya.
Justin Fields.